Welcome back to Off the Bench. I'm Brandon Carney alongside Pat Gustafson. And Pat, we are really reaching the initial dog days of the offseason now. You know, putting the show sheet together today, there was only so much to really do for football right now. Because, I mean, you know, we talked last week and leading up to this week how this podcast is going to cover everything NFL related. We're going to get into free agency. We're going to get into the draft. And there will be a lot of that coming here in the next few weeks. But it's really just starting, and so there's really not a lot going on yet. All we've really got right now, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, is the franchise tag window open today, and there's starting to be some, you know, some leaks of some little draft rumors, some nuggets here and there, but there's not really a whole lot to go off right now. We're kind of just spitballing a little bit.
We're still so early here. What do we have, like a week and a half until free agency?
Free agency is March 13th, so we've got like 3 weeks.
Jeez, yeah. That feels like an eternity.
Yeah, we've got a little bit. So, I mean, look, once free agency starts, the floodgates definitely open, because that will tell us, you know, obviously we'll be reacting to those moves in themselves, but also it'll frame kind of what some of these teams are going to do in the draft. Anyone that signs, you know, Kirk Cousins probably isn't going to spend a high pick on a quarterback, things of that nature. But we'll get into that when we get into that. Pat, for now, honestly, some of the things that we are going to react to, or I guess some of the things to talk about, and we'll get into some free agent stuff here in a few minutes. But Pat, NBA All-Star Weekend was fucking brutal. How much of it did you catch? Did you catch any of it?
I caught an unfortunate amount of it, honestly.
Me too. Me too.
I watched the entire All-Star game at a at a viewing.
You wouldn't have
me dead watching a minute of it.
What kind of psychopath holds a viewing for the All-Star game?
Tim, if you're listening, you're being called out here, but
he just wants to see his friends.
And FOMO. But the thing is like, I don't know why we expect more. See, that's the thing. Like, I personally didn't mind the All-Star game specifically, because like, who cares? Like, you know what? Like, I'm surprised that people were surprised at the product. Like, we know that these are guys that are just hot dogging it. They're not going to play defense, but I think it's pretty cool to see, you know, the best 15 or so players in the NBA, you know, hit half court shots and dunk, and Nikola Jokic make layups. Yeah, if they're actually looking for this to be a serious product, though, they are going to have to figure something out. And honestly, even the skill competition, the skills night kind of blew, too.
Yeah,
it wasn't a whole lot of great stuff besides a little white boy dazzling
Mac
the screens
McClung.
Yet again.
Mac McClung, I saw somebody tweet that they pull Mac McClung out like a circus animal for All-Star weekend every year. Like, he does, this dude gets no NBA PT. He just exists in the G League, and then they bust him out for All-Star weekend. Like, hey, everybody, look at the elephant with two trunks, or whatever the fuck they're using him as. I agree with you. Like, the All-Star game, I guess I don't agree with you in the sense that I feel like they need to figure out how to do something for the All-Star game, because, like, I honestly, Pat, you know, being so deep into football and so just not really following the NBA, I didn't realize that they had changed the format again. I remember recently, or at least a couple years back, they had done the Elam ending, which kind of created some more competitiveness, at least at the end of the game, because there was like a target score and just the players actually were going at each other a little bit. And I don't know exactly what the solution is here to create a level of competitiveness in this game, because I think so many, just the vibe in general across all sports now is nobody's going to put themselves at risk, or nobody's going to try unless there's something tangible on the line. Like, we're seeing it with, you know, college football bowl games and players sitting out unless it's a playoff bowl game and things of that nature. I don't know what the answer is. I'll say this, and, you know, I guess I'm going to be that guy that offers up just negatives instead of solutions, but I'm like, I don't think it should be the winner of the All-Star game gets a home court in the finals. I've seen that float a little bit. In the MLB, I don't know. No, I'm
no,
saying
the MLB,
in the
they don't. But does
the MLB,
the NBA
they don't
do
anymore.
That?
Okay, no, the NBA doesn't do that, and I don't think they ever did. But there's some people floating that as a solution, because they're like, oh, well, there will be guys on both teams who, you know, whether logically or illogically, will think their team could be in the finals, and so they'll try hard. And I'm just like, I don't want, especially as a Nuggets fan, my team was just in the finals. Like, I don't want the Nuggets' home court advantage in the finals to be determined by whether Devin Booker doesn't fucking brick a few threes or something in an All-Star game. Like, I understand it would create certainly a more competitive atmosphere because he would be trying, as would every other player, presumably in that game. But I just don't think that's the answer. I did see Nick Wright float a really funny idea. He was like, you know, having money as an incentive in these games is one thing. Like, these guys are super rich, whatever. But he was like, we should have to actually incentivize it because they're all rich already. Put the money in bags on the baseline of the game, and then they can just get bags of cash at the end. And that way there's something that they're tangibly looking at and seeing. He's like, we'd have to implement a whole nother layer of security in this arena if that was what they decided to do. But I was like, you know what? That's a really funny idea to just be like, have it be like Squid Game style, where there's just like a giant thing of money hanging above. And whenever, if you win, you get it immediately. I like that idea. But yeah, in general, I mean, a super lackluster.
While that is ridiculous, I think the solution here is just, pay them. Give them any, you know? I mean, yeah. I know a lot of contracts have incentives that'll go up if you make the All-Star team, but, like, just pay them straight up. Like, the NBA, the league will give you a stipend, whatever, if you make the All-Star team. Because the thing about the NBA, too, is out of all the major sports, that's the one the most where All-Stars, like, counts a lot towards legacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like you'll never hear MLB pundits saying like, "Oh, this guy made the All-Star team 7 times, so he should be in the Hall of Fame." Like, no, you don't hear that. You don't hear that quite as much in the NFL either. But in the NBA, I feel like it matters the most. So I feel like you need, you know, like this needs to still happen. Like this needs to be a thing. But outside of just paying them, I don't know what you can really do to incentivize them to show some effort. I mean, I still thought it was entertaining, but like if you were looking for a quality basketball game, you were just watching the wrong thing, and you honestly should have known that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, especially for like casual followers, kind of like myself, as far as the All-Star game is concerned with the NBA, of like they've jerked around the format now so many times, like I don't know what to expect. I've seen it be competitive in the last few years, and then now it goes back to this kind of game. And yeah, while I like watching, you know, the best players in the NBA, it's like the stuff they're doing really, anyone, not anyone, but like high level basketball players at any level could do. Like I can watch anybody pull up from half court and make, well, maybe not every time, but you know, I could watch guys make open threes over and over. And you know, you could go to, if you had this level of competitiveness at an LA fitness gym, you could put up the same score and see the same style of play if you go to the right place. So it was a little rough. And I think you make a good point about paying the player, but you'd have to pay them for winning the All-Star game. That would be what it would incentivize, because I think if you just pay them for making the All-Star team, well, you're still at the point where
to win,
you're still at the point where when the game tips off, I mean, they didn't have anything to play for. They've already been paid if it's just for, you know, getting there. But I agree with that. And the I will say, from the All-Star weekend, three-point contest was fine. It was standard.
I mean, it was
pretty, pretty good. It's always the best part, because the three-point contest is a lot like the home run derby, where it's like no matter how many times you see the same kind of thing over and over, it's still entertaining to watch guys do that shit. It just is. I thought Steph versus Sabrina was a fun little thing. Sabrina killed it from the men's three-point line. That was crazy.
She, tied everyone else in that final round or whatever.
Yeah, so I loved that. I thought that was a good showcase for her and just for the WNBA in general. Hopefully we can get Caitlin Clark out there when she hits the W soon, because she is a freak. I think she could actually challenge Curry and beat him, so I think that might be fun. And
it just goes to show that Steph is just goaded, man. Like he,
I mean, things we knew for 500, Alex.
I know, but just time and time again, no matter this guy, you know, I don't want to call him old, but starting to trend towards old. This man will be able to this man will be in a wheelchair someday just cashing threes.
No, seriously. And the dunk contest was pitiful, again, as it has been for years now.
Did not watch that.
I think, Pat, I kind of think it hit a new low this year. First of all, they made the scoring unnecessarily complicated. They allowed each judge to rate the dunks from a scale of 1 to 50, which just created weird decimal point average. Like, every single judge didn't go below a 43 on any dunk. I don't even think they went that. I think 46 was the lowest any judge put up. So I'm like, why are we giving them such a big gamut? Well, what used to be was everyone scored on 1 to 10, and then you averaged, added it up, and so that would be how you got a 50 for a dunk. It was because everyone gave you 10s. I don't know why they went for the 1 to 50 scale. I'll say this. While it was good that Jaylen Brown did the dunk contest and actually put some star power in it. Dude was garbage, and when it comes to people asking for stars to be in the dunk contest, I tweeted this as well because people were pissing me off about it. When we say we want stars in the dunk contest, it comes with the obvious prerequisite that we don't want them to attempt the most boring shit possible. Like, no, I don't want... I guess I kind of do want Nikola Jokic in the dunk contest, but no, I don't want Nikola Jokic in the dunk contest because I know that's not going to be entertaining. So no, we don't want stars for the sake of stars. We want stars that are going to come in, be willing to, you know, be creative and have hops and all that. And Jaylen Brown's most notable like moment was jumping over a dude who was 5'5", sitting down, and just the most boring basic dunk, and then like pretending he covered his eyes after. It was really bad. Mack McClung was really the only thing that saved
it. I give Jaylen Brown tons of props for doing what a star has been unwilling to do for at least a decade. I couldn't tell you exactly the last time, but even really back in our day, there really, like, the biggest star was just Dwight Howard. It was kind of just like Dwight Howard, and then you had your usual characters like Nate Robinson, Gerald Green, who were by no means stars. But now you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. You literally have a G Leaguer who has won the dunk contest 2 years in a row. But, I had something to say and then I forgot because, you know, this is what I do. But, had to do with the dunk contest. Oh, I see these videos on YouTube and I should write down who said it. But someone made the idea, make it like 8 feet. Like, is there anything else we can truly see on 10 feet?
No, probably not.
Like, if you know, you think that like making the hoop 8 foot would open the door for some things we've never seen before, then do it. But I think that's the other thing, is they've just been doing this for so long. No matter how athletic these guys get, there's only so much stuff you can see. Like, you know, Aaron Gordon, the under the legs, or you know, Gerald Green blowing out the candle on the back of the rim. Like, there's only so much more we can see now. And I just, like, it's set up to fail. Like, I don't think, since the Gordon-Levine showdown, I think it is basically just set up to fail because it will never be as good as that.
Dwayne Wade killed the dunk contest, and I will forever say that, because as a judge, when he screwed Aaron Gordon out of that title, I think that not only pissed Aaron Gordon off, I think that just cursed the dunk contest in general. Jaylen Brown, look. I kept seeing people say, like, oh, you can't criticize Jaylen Brown when you've all been asking for stars to do the dunk contest forever. Like, sure, you could do both. Like, props for, like, putting yourself out there, I guess, but, like, not every star is going to be subjected to the same sort of criticism that we're giving Jaylen Brown if you just kind of do the bare minimum of creativity. Like, I don't know what Jaylen Brown, like, you used to have Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon talking about how, like, they were planning their dunks out for, like, weeks beforehand. I feel like Jaylen just kind of showed up and, like, just tried stuff, and it wasn't really all that cool. He did not study for the exam. Mack McClung's always studying for the exam. So shout out to our circus animal that they bust out every year for.
Remember when he was at Georgetown and everyone in the Big East hated him?
Yep, Georgetown, and then he went off to Texas Tech, killed it for a little bit, and now is just in the G League and dunks the ball sometimes. But that was NBA All-Star Weekend. Pat, Daytona 500, I know that's your thing. I wanted to ask you about it. I know nothing about what happened, but the floor is yours. How was that event? I know it got postponed for a day.
Well, one, that is a cursed event. There's rain there every year. Every fucking year there's rain there, but... I hate the kind of racing that they have at Daytona. It's called super speedway racing, where there's like a pack, there's a draft. Oh, there's only four races like it on the schedule, and I hate it because it just turns into a demolition derby. Like, this is NASCAR's Super Bowl to start the season. You had a very successful Netflix series that probably brought in new viewers. So all they see now is that your biggest race, your crown jewel race, is... who can miss the carnage? Who could not become a part-time astronaut, basically, in this thing? And it's a joke. Like, I was, like, at the end of the race, I was just like, I was just almost just, like, embarrassed. Like that's not NASCAR. That is not NASCAR to me. But that said, I'm really glad it's back. But, I hated it. I hated it.
All right. I didn't know that was kind of where it stood. So that's interesting. See, guys, this is what we try to provide you on this podcast, is insight and opinions on sports you wouldn't even think about necessarily.
I like the old man sports.
Yeah, Pat is our resident NASCAR expert. Tune in for more golf takes next week. Oh, there will be golf takes for sure. But look, on tap for today is our free agent preview. We're just going to kind of go through some of the biggest names here on the NFL free agent market for, again, our actual free agency kicks off on March 13th in about 3 weeks. So we'll go through some of the biggest names just to give you guys a primer, a little refresher. And we're also going to get into a little fantasy football related draft. Now, what we're going to do is basically take players who are free agents and put them into what we believe are their ideal fantasy football spots, but we're going to do it draft style. So once I, you know, choose Saquon Barkley to go somewhere that I think will be his ideal fit, Pat cannot select Saquon Barkley to a different team or something to that effect. So basically, we are combining our powers to create a cumulative sort of these are their best fits. And also, we're going to be realistic about it. We're not going to, you know, it seems very likely at this point that T. Higgins and Michael Pittman Jr. are going to be franchise tagged. So even though their ideal landing spots may be elsewhere than Cincinnati or Indianapolis, especially for T. Higgins, who's just going to be in Jamar Chase's shadow for the rest of his life, I guess. Even though their ideal spots may be elsewhere, we're not probably going to pick them. But stay tuned. We'll see. Pat, let's get into the news and notes of the weekend. Hey, I'll hit the sound effect.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I was going to remind you if you didn't do it.
It's easier to have a news segment now that we're like out of season, because when we're in season, it's just everything. You can like categorize things a little bit easier. So yes, there are some pieces of news to talk about, Pat. First on our ledger here, this is groundbreaking, absolutely catastrophic, massive news. Justin Fields has unfollowed the Chicago Bears on Instagram. I don't know how this isn't the top headline on CNN, on Fox News, just everywhere. I don't know why I didn't get sort of one of those like Amber Alert type notifications where your phone just fucking buzzes and scares the shit out of you. I kind of thought that's what would happen, but
they should absolutely have one of those for players unfollow. I know there's a Twitter account, I believe.
That's great. I love that. But yeah, look, Justin Fields unfollows the Bears on Instagram, and it's stupid. It's definitely a stupid thing, but it is at least reflective of something that we kind of knew was going to happen anyway, which is Justin Fields is not going to be a Chicago Bear for very much longer. It's very much trending toward Caleb Williams being the Bears' number one pick in the upcoming draft, and you know, there was plenty of discussion leading up to, I guess, this moment where people weren't sure which one the Bears were going to trade. They certainly weren't going to keep Fields and draft Williams. They were either going to trade Fields or trade the pick. Seems like they're certainly at this point going to trade Fields, and this unfollow is just a product of that. Pat, what do you make of this beyond just the obvious?
These guys are such trolls, man. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're like, oh, no one's going to see this. Like, yeah, people are going to fucking see it. But no, I don't think it's indicative of whether he's happy there or not. I've said it time and time again that I don't think he's going to be there. Just one way or another. And I guess not unfollowing them on Instagram maybe won't help your cause if you're trying to guide your way to a destination. I mean, I guess we can't pick him in our draft, but I'm sure we'll be talking about him because obviously the quarterback free agency landscape, I think, probably starts and ends with Justin Fields. Like, I don't think anything really happens until Justin Fields is gone. So,
yeah, I mean, certainly the biggest combination of, like, youth and talent among the quarterback free agents, and I mean, we'll talk about these guys, but really the only starter worthy free agents for quarterbacks are going to be Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield. Ryan Tannehill will probably end up starting somewhere because he's just at that age where I don't think he's gonna take a spot on a roster that's not a starting role, because I think there is one he can find somewhere. He's not going to just settle for being a backup. But it's definitely not a ton of guys, as it never is with quarterbacks, right? Teams tend to lock up their quarterbacks if they're any good, and they let them go if they're bad. But yeah, the Justin Fields domino will certainly be one to watch, and it's the most possible moving domino right now, because until free agency begins, like, they could trade Justin right now while we're on air if they wanted to, but obviously nobody can sign Kirk Cousins until March 13th. So that is where we are at with the quarterback landscape. I think Justin Fields is going to end up a Falcon. That just seems like where it's going. He's from Atlanta. Atlanta needs a quarterback. I think Atlanta, with how their roster is built, are certainly, you know, not to say they're just a quarterback away, but you could probably make that argument. And
I'd argue it. They're a quarterback away from at least being in the mix.
they're a quarterback away from at least being the clear favorites in the NFC South to me. I mean, the Buccaneers, certainly, if they re-sign Baker and re-sign Mike Evans, are going to be tough to beat. But again, this Buccaneers team was still barely over 500. I think the Falcons, top to bottom, are a more talented roster. They just need a quarterback that can steer the ship and a head coach who's not going to self-sabotage the entire team. And I think they've at least got that second one. We'll see if they can get the first one, be it Kirk or Justin Fields. But I think Justin Fields will be an Atlanta Falcon here in the next couple weeks, and I think that's a pretty fun fit. But we will talk about and react to that if and when it comes to fruition. Pat, some pre-draft hype is starting to leak out here. Some rumors, and it always makes me laugh because we go through a full season of college football where you have every opportunity in the world to sit and watch all these guys play, and then once the offseason hits, all these narratives start coming out as if like we didn't just watch all these guys play a full season, and people just kind of make things up, I feel like, and hope that nobody fact checks them. That might be an exaggerative way of putting it, but this is all to say J.J. McCarthy is being speculated by some as being as high as quarterback number two. Now, we've seen Jim Harbaugh be psychotic and say that he thinks JJ will be the number one quarterback off the board. I think that level of hype has been all but debunked. But, you know, I have seen a few rumors here, and one of them from ESPN's Matt Miller, who says he spoke to several scouts and one in particular who believes McCarthy would be Joe Burrow on a team that threw the ball more. This could not be more pre-draft hypey shenanigans if it tried. Like that,
that's like a Mad Lib.
Yeah, just throwing Joe Burrow in the same sentence as J.J. McCarthy just because you can and just because you technically don't have evidence against it. Because, yeah, Michigan didn't throw the ball very much. So you can create fairy tale land J.J. McCarthy and say, oh, well, if this, then he could have been that. And I'm like, look, yes, maybe J.J. McCarthy has a level that he hasn't tapped into yet because he hasn't been able to, given the scheme and the game plan. I understand that. That can absolutely happen from college to NFL level. But for you to suggest, look, if this guy was Joe Burrow, they would have thrown the ball like Joe Burrow threw the ball. Like Michigan sees J.J. McCarthy in practice every day. If they thought he had Joe Burrow level talent, they would not have been as conservative, as run heavy as they were. Yes, I think he could maybe be a level above what we saw him do at Michigan, but I just hate when they start to throw in these comps like Joe Burrow, and I guess it's a scout doing it. It's like, guys, why do we have to get so reckless with it so early in the process? It's just silly to me.
And like, let's be honest here. Some of these guys are in the agents' pockets. Let's be honest. You know, that's been a thing about insiders in sports. Like, what's the joke that like John Heyman in baseball is like inside Scott, you know, Scott Boras's pocketbook, but. But a lot of times, like, remember, like, when Mel Kiper fucking loved Jimmy Clausen? Like, loved Jimmy Clausen and said he'd retire? Why the fuck do you think he liked Jimmy Clausen? Like, these guys are getting, you know, these agents want to hype these players up. And, you know, I see nothing more than that. And I'm surprised it's happening so early. And it's also just a reason for people to listen. Like, we're talking about, you know, if Matt Miller says J.J. McCarthy will be the fourth quarterback off the board. We're not talking about this. Mm-hmm. This is also a way to get people talking. And maybe would he be the third? I still don't think so. Like, I would be pretty surprised. Like, this feels like a lot of, like, Mac Jones talk from a few years ago. And they're like, oh, Mac Jones is going to go to the 49ers. Maybe. Well, they were almost right. But it didn't happen. Like, in no world would I take him over Caleb Williams. Would I take him over Drake May? Would I take him over Jane Daniels? And, yeah, it's just a whole lot of nothing. And I pointed out in our sheet that didn't this happen with Will Levis, except it was way closer to the draft.
Like, yeah, like, it was like his the odds, day before.
Like, his odds like shot to like his odds to go number two like skyrocketed. And the guy went and the Mayo Eater went in the second round.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just goes to show that this is so volatile. It's February 20th. We've still got a couple months before these statements are going to hold any kind of water. And even then, they didn't hold water. And it was the day before the damn draft. So,
yeah.
It's nonsense for the sake of it.
It's very interesting to me, though, because, you know, again, this, if we are to believe Matt Miller, which I have no reason not to, this information is coming from a scout, which isn't necessarily someone that I don't think would have an agent, you know, completely associated with them. Like, when this stuff comes from...
Scout can tell you don't have to report it.
That is true. That is true. But, it, you know, assuming a scout did say that, I'm like, man, these guys are already just thinking themselves, excuse me, into a circle here just because it's the offseason. And I know that once the offseason hits, you have more time to study some of these things and maybe give things more context, but I also think you can go a little too far the other direction. And yeah, it just all feels like peak pre-draft overthinking. I think McCarthy is fine as QB4, which is what we believed he was all this time. Anything beyond that feels a little disingenuous, and I wouldn't be surprised to see, or I wouldn't think it was wrong if like Bo Nix or Michael Penix went above him either. Could be a possibility once draft time gets here. But again, we've got so much time.
Bennett was elderly, man. Bo Nix is like,
I know. I don't think Bo Nix is a guy.
Bo Nix was in college pre-COVID, wasn't he?
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah. I think he played in college at the same time as Justin Herbert did.
There might have been black and white TVs when he was in college. Let's see. Auburn, freshman in 2019. Yeah, so yeah, the year before COVID.
1986, back when the football was actual pigskin. Is it actual pigskin still now? I don't know. I have
There's
no idea.
No way.
Anyway, all right, we'll move on from this and keep tabs on these draft rumors as more and more of them pop up. But Pat, speaking
let's
of
create
mediocre
a draft
quarterbacks.
Rumor.
Okay, you want to create a draft rumor right now?
Well, I mean, maybe not right now, but I mean, something that we should think about.
I heard
any ideas?
I heard that Bo Nix said Mark Davis is ugly.
Oh man, so, I'm tweeting it.
that's what I heard. Anyway,
the source tells off the bench.
Here we go. Yeah. Get your tweet out.
Mm-hmm. The NFL prospect, Oregon QB Bo Nix. Follow me on Twitter at PJ Gustafson. Called Raiders owner Mark Davis, quote, ugly. Ugly. Greatly diminishing the odds of Nix wearing the silver and black.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Just stereotypical reporter talk right there.
I mean, I did this for a brief amount of time.
I know, as did I. It sounds painfully familiar.
Let's see. Let me just, a source tells off the bench, or should I put the source part at the end?
You know, however you think it's structured, you know, the best. I'll allow you to make that judgment.
You know, yeah. A source tells off the bench with bench warmer brand.
There you go. Credit me. Yeah. Credit the pod, because somebody, some big NFL account tried to credit me for something the other day, and it did not tag me correctly.
We're going to be on, like, Dov Kleeman's feed. Fuck it.
Oh, God.
I don't even know if he's real.
He's the Dov Kleeman's AI. Fuck that guy. Anyway, speaking of the silver and black and mediocre quarterbacks, Pat, we've got some news here about Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is apparently juicing. My man got a 2-game suspension.
My man's got Botox. Like, that's all it was.
When I saw the report that it was like his contract could be greatly affected or like voided by the fact that he took performance enhancing drugs, I was like, the Raiders slipped that shit in his coffee. No question about it. Like, they're like, we are getting out of this dude's contract no matter what it takes. We will slip some HGH into this man's little morning latte from the Raiders cafeteria.
If he's anything like Tom Brady, his morning carrot and celery juice. But apparently what it was is that he was taking an illegal substance, but the NFL could approve it if you can prove that medically you need it, which he just didn't do. Like, it just blows my mind how, well, one, like, just in general, when these guys get popped for steroids and they say, like, oh, I put something into my body and I wasn't aware of what it was. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, like, say that is true. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know that something like this could tarnish your reputation, could greatly affect your career. You need to know every single ingredient in every single thing that you are putting into your body as a professional athlete. But That kind of goes on a different story where I guess Jimmy G was just lazy or he just didn't know it was illegal, maybe. But again, if he didn't know it was illegal, check it out. All you got to do is ask, hey, is this illegal? Yes, but you can get it cleared. Okay.
Jimmy G don't give a fuck no more. He knows his career's going down the tubes. He's in full send it mode. If it's a PED, it's a PED. If it's a Flintstones gummy, it's a Flintstone gummy. We'll figure out after the fact, after we get the positive test. But yeah, just one of the funnier headlines to see, because of all the players you would think are juicing, it is not Jimmy G. That is about
the bottom third of the list. And this is going to void his guarantee.
What I was referring to. Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, look, very helpful for the Raiders, I guess.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
That's why, again, I think he might have had the drink spiked or something. But no, obviously that's not what happened. But you know, fortunate for the Raiders. And as for Jimmy G, you know, we'll see where his career takes him next, because it seems like he is, you know, clearly trending the wrong direction. We went from, oh, he's such a winner, like he can carry this or he can drive this 49ers bus, and you know, he could get him to a state. And now people realize what I knew the whole time, you know, not to pat myself on the back. The guy's mid as fuck. He's just good if you put good weapons and good coaching around him. Shocker. Almost every quarterback with even remote NFL talent could put up okay numbers under those circumstances. Once you give him less than completely ideal, you know, perfect circumstances, you see who he really is, which is garbage. So if he gets another starting job, that team.
Come on.
No, I mean, eventually, not this offseason.
Maybe by the Arthur Smith-led Steelers, but
God, man, a quarterback room of Jimmy G, Mason Rudolph, and Kenny Pickett literally put me the fuck out to pasture and claw my eyes out with a spoon, because to anyone that would have to subject themselves to that on a daily basis, from every Steelers coach, assistant, player, like, just gardener, equipment manager, God, prayers up to you if you ever had to see that in person. That is just pure pain. Pat, some important dates I want to touch on here, you know, as we approach the sort of the real offseason. You know, this is kind of the first show of the offseason, just to mention them. So I mentioned it briefly today, February 20th. The franchise tag window opens for teams, and this will remain open for 2 weeks until March 5th. So from today up until March 5th, you could see and will see a decent chunk of players get franchise tagged. I feel like we usually see around 5-ish, maybe more players get franchise tagged. It varies off season to off season.
And everybody hates it.
And everybody hates it. Yeah, I mean, the franchise tag concept in itself is completely whack, but that's, you know, not besides the point, but just not what I'm talking about right now. What we will see is just to, I guess, prime people for what news they'll see over the next, you know, 2 weeks or so. Notice how the day that I'm saying this, there have been no franchise tags. We'll probably see more of them closer to the actual deadline for it, and we'll talk to you guys about some of the players who are likely to have that happen.
Or, you know, the day after we record.
Or the day after we record, yeah. As soon as we go off air, there's going to be 6 franchise tags that come through immediately, and I will throw this episode into the sun. No, keep an eye on that, and we will react to those as they come through. Hopefully we get, you know, 1 or 2 before next week's episode, just to give us an idea of where some of these guys stand. But those are the franchise tag dates. Opens today, February 20th, and closes March 5th, so in about 2 weeks. March 13th, free agency officially begins. So again, in about 3 weeks, we'll be talking about actual free agency. Actually, I guess that's a little over 3 weeks, man. Fuck this. Takes too long. Yeah. And then April 25th to 27th will be the NFL draft. So that's the framework of the key dates of the offseason right now.
Push through people.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's just that's what we'll be talking about and leading into as we go here over the next few weeks. But Pat, let's get into the notable free agents of this offseason. Now, we're not going to make predictions about everybody, but we can here and there where we deem appropriate. So I'll go position by position here. You know, quite frankly, I'm not going to go through every position on the defense, because this is also largely a fantasy football show, so we care a little bit more about the offensive guys. But I will mention you know, a bunch of the defensive standouts. It just won't be positionally. So quarterbacks,
there's actually a good amount of them too.
There is a good amount of very, you know, expected high impact players on the defensive side. Quarterback free agents: Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill, and Jacoby Brissett. Again, we mentioned before, the quarterback market free agent wise is dry, as it generally is, but we don't usually see a quarterback like Kirk Cousins caliber be a free agent. And yes, he's old. Yes, he's coming off an Achilles, and that is a big reason why he is, you know, a free agent and potentially actually leaving the Vikings. There hasn't been a ton of rumors about them being like adamant about bringing him back. It seems like they're kind of open to all options at this point. The only piece of news that did come out recently is that the Vikings are not going to give him a fully guaranteed deal like he has received in the past. So they're at least a little bit, you know, cooler on him than they once were. But again, coming off a torn Achilles, obviously, like the guy is objectively more, like, not fragile, but, you know, beat up than he was the last time you gave him a guaranteed deal. That's just kind of how this works. So Kirk Cousins will be the most highly sought after quarterback, I would think. I'm curious to see what teams actually pursue him, because there's a few that need him. But then my view, especially as a Patriots fan, is I want us to be looking for like a young franchise guy. But Kirk's going to be highly desired.
Well, I think, like, to your point there about the Patriots, it's just a matter of, are you in the top three in the draft? No. Then you're probably going to be in on Kirk Cousins. Right. Like, if you, unless you think a guy like J.J., we talked about J.J. McCarthy, unless you think taking a guy like McCarthy is a better option than that. But, yeah, if he is by far, I think, the best quarterback here. And, like, you know, we talk a lot about Kirk Cousins, but, you know, the dude is, while the ceiling's not crazy high, I mean, he's pretty rock solid. Like, you know what you're going to get out of Kirk Cousins. He's got a pretty good floor. Like, if you're, you know, we saw last year Kenny Pickett and Desmond Ridder go into the season as starting quarterbacks. Like, you're not going to get that low level of play out of a guy like Kirk Cousins. Like,
no.
If you, like, say, huh, we need a quarterback, but we kind of want to be good this year. Like, Kirk Cousins, or in by good for these teams, it means, you know, make playoffs. Like, for the Raiders example, like, you sure. Put Kirk Cousins on the Raiders, they've got a lot better shot to make the playoffs here. You know, yeah. A team like the Steelers, team like the Falcons. They could really use a guy like Kirk Cousins. Even the Vikings, hell, duh.
Yeah, just keep him where he is. Yeah, Kirk Cousins definitely the headliner of the free agent quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield not far behind, but I think we kind of expect him to remain in Tampa. That's not a sure thing at this point, but Tampa has the money. They don't particularly have other good options for the quarterback position right now.
They seem to like Kyle Trask last year.
I feel like what Baker did this year has hopefully put the Trask, the Trask train to bed here. Put
the trains
it
off the Trask.
Leave it. Fuck, that is not what I was going for. Maybe it was subconsciously. Anyway, I think Baker will end up being the Bucs quarterback, so there's not much speculation I'm going to do right now about him going elsewhere. And then, look, Tannehill, the rumors have been that he could reunite with Arthur Smith in Pittsburgh. One, gross, but two, improvement at least. Like, that is better, I think, than Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett.
I'd rather have Ryan Tannehill over anyone on that roster, which does not include Mitch Trubisky anymore. They cut him.
Yeah, fair enough. I just think the Steelers, regardless of if they do or don't get Ryan Tannehill, are not going to be a super fun team to watch. Are they a team that could backdoor their way into the playoffs if Ryan Tannehill is stable? Sure. They have Mike Tomlin. They have a great defense. They do this shit all the time. But are they going to be a team that I think is a legitimate contender in any sense of the word? Absolutely not. They're going to need to find their quarterback of the future at some point. But they, you know, they're kind of in that perfect spot to get a vet like this, because they're not in a place where they're going to have a high draft pick. And so they can, you know, bring in Tannehill and then maybe spend a second rounder on Penix if they want to, or even a later pick on, and just, you know, really throw a dart. I know there's the kid from Tulane whose name escapes me right now, but he's got some buzz. That's going to be the Steelers' kind of path forward for right now. And then Jacoby Brissett, just another name that we're familiar with. You know, we'll see if he lands somewhere that he can compete for a starting job. He's always a guy that, again, unlike, you know, you mentioned Ridder and Pickett, like, I don't think that anywhere Jacoby Brissett goes, if he stumbles into a starting job, Jacoby Brissett's never going to be the worst starting quarterback in the league. Like, he's probably never going to be bottom five. Like, he's always just, he's good enough, you know, for a team that needs a warm body.
I consider, like, him and Gardner Minshew are kind of in the same class of, like, really solid backups that just, like, I mean, look at the Colts. Like, you know, Anthony Richardson goes down, Gardner Minshew's there. You know, we've seen Jacoby Brissett step up for numerous teams in the past when quarterbacks have gone down. So he's just dependable. He's not going to light it up, but he's dependable. And like the Browns probably wish they had Jacoby Brissett this year.
Oh,
instead of their, you know, regardless of what Joe Flacco did there. And Joe Flacco as well is a free agent, I guess.
Sure is.
I wonder if anyone will, I mean, someone will bite and give him a roster spot, you'd think, but I wonder if anyone is truly going to give Joe Flacco a roster spot with the intention of him competing for a starting quarterback. As fun as that was, I really hope not.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was more of a fun story with a sprinkle of actual production than it was pure production and being like, oh, this guy can still, you know, lead a team and really be one of the top or top 10 or 15 quarterbacks. Like, no, he threw some deep touchdowns. He threw a bunch of picks. It was all a semblance of a guy with nothing to lose on a very good team. And I don't.
And he loves David Njoku.
David Njoku's going to be like holding the boombox outside Joe Flacco's house. Like, please come back. I don't care who our quarterback. I just want it to be you. I don't want Deshaun. Come back.
One wants it to be Deshaun, but I don't even know if Deshaun wants it to be Deshaun.
Well, Deshaun likes to do things whether other people want him to or not. Moving on to the running backs. Now, Pat, this seems to be the position group that at least has the most name value, the most star power. There's questions about some of these guys, whether, you know, they have a lot left in the tank or if they're falling off, but we'll see. Either way, it's definitely a star-studded class by name. So it's led by a guy who I don't have those concerns about in Saquon Barkley. Reports are that the Giants are unlikely to franchise tag Barkley for a second time. So certainly seems like he is headed elsewhere. He's going to be the biggest fish on the running back market. And then beyond him, you've got Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, friend of the show, Austin Eckler, Gus Edwards, DeAndre Swift, Devin Singletary, and Ezekiel Elliott. And there are some other guys where if you look up the free agents, you will recognize their names as well. But at a certain point, I got to cut the list off. A lot of quality running backs here. So I'll be very excited to see where these guys go.
Yeah, and in a lot of teams that could use one. You know, obviously the teams, if these guys all depart, most teams are going to need running backs. And we're talking about this draft as being like a paradise for skill position players. That's mainly quarterbacks and wide receivers. Like, the running backs aren't quite on par with those positions. But, and we've also seen in the NFL, the days of the bell cow running back are kind of drifting out. So, you know, a lot of teams, you may think they have a running back. Like, oh, that guy can handle the backfield, for example, like Rashad White in Tampa Bay. Like, oh, we saw him do it, but if you can go and get a good complimentary running back, take some load off him, why not? So I think, you know, you're going to have to look past all of, like, the conventional spots because you just never know. Realistically, almost any team in the league could probably use some depth at running back.
Yeah, I think some of these guys, you know, it's going to be really interesting if they kind of accept a new role this offseason as well, depending what team they go to. Like, Austin Eckler, I'm fully expecting to go to a team that already has some sort of established running back because no team is going to be committing to him as their full-fledged guy. I mean, the Chargers weren't even doing it this year. And granted, I'm going to bring this up every chance I get because I think Eckler's getting a bit too bad of a rap for being completely washed. Like, he was dealing with an ankle injury on and off all season. And yes, that's the kind of thing that I suppose could reoccur next season. And then you're left with the same Austin Eckler you had this offseason or this season. But in general, like, I don't think that's a true representation of who he is. I think he's got enough left in the tank that, like, look, if the Patriots signed him, I mean, I'm all for giving Ramondre all the work he can handle, but, like, I'd still be excited to see Austin Eckler. But it's going to be interesting to see if he does go to a team where, you know, they've already got kind of an early down back and what kind of level of touches he may get. Derrick Henry's another one, Pat. I mean, Derrick Henry, I believe, led the league again in total carries this year. But now that he's heading likely elsewhere. He kind of had that goodbye, you know, with Tennessee at the end of the year.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if he goes somewhere where he has a complimentary, you know, player on the roster already. I think Henry's going to be the 1A no matter what. Like, he's not going to take like a backup sort of role, even though he is getting older and I am ageist, as everybody knows. I'm not that crazy though to believe like he's going to go be a second stringer somewhere, but would it surprise me to see him go somewhere that has a back who was somewhat productive this year and who we don't expect to be like phased out of the offense? No, absolutely not. So it'll be fun to see where they go. And again, these are some of the names that when we get to our draft here in a few minutes, will be exciting to see where we think they're going to, or where we think their ideal landing spots are that are fairly realistic.
I have a feeling most of it's going to be the running backs.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's really not a lot of other positions worth putting in these places, but look, the running back class more than anything, I think is the most highly touted of this free agent class. And then we get to the wide receivers, headlined by really one receiver in particular, because a few of them are likely to be franchise tagged. It's Big Mike Evans out of Tampa Bay. you know, a billion straight 1,000-yard seasons. The guy is as good as they come. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and it seems like there is a real chance he ends up somewhere other than Tampa Bay this offseason. Certainly Tampa Bay is going to make an effort to re-sign him, but they've been making those efforts to some extent, you know, for a year now, and they were unable to come to an agreement. And so it looks like Evans is going to test the free agent waters, and he's definitely going to be the most highly sought after free agent here with, again, T. Higgins and Michael Pittman looking like they're going to be franchise tags. Certainly those guys are younger and have similar talent level to Mike Evans, not quite as good, but still among the elites. They're not going anywhere. Mike Evans is. So, Pat, I this is going to be a big domino for the receivers.
I was going to say that. And Mike Evans is such a versatile in the sense that he can obviously go back to Tampa where he's established, you know, a future Hall of Fame career. And, or he could go to a young team, a younger quarterback that really needs kind of you know, some stability at wide receiver. We've seen it, you know, with Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, A.J. Brown in Philly, D.J. Moore in Chicago, like that kind of thing. Or he could go to a team that's basically a wide receiver away. You know, a really good team, like, God forbid, the Chiefs or the Ravens. You know, teams that, you know, probably don't need Mike Evans, but he could just go there and slide right into that number one wide receiver spot and make a good team even better.
Yeah, and I think one thing to remember, too, as you think about free agents and speculate is we don't know what these guys truly want and prioritize. I think we like to pretend like we do sometimes. Like when DeAndre Hopkins was a free agent, everyone and their mother thought he was going to go ring chase somewhere because he hadn't really sniffed, you know, a deep playoff run. The best he did was with the Deshaun Watson Texans teams, and he went to Tennessee. And got paid. Like, you never know. And Mike Evans also has a ring already, which factors in as well. Or maybe it doesn't. Like, again, I don't know, like, if he's satisfied with one ring and he might go somewhere to, like you said, help a young quarterback or wants another ring. So he goes to the Chiefs and just is like, hey, I'll be the number one target or at least number two behind Kelsey on this great team. We don't know. All we can do is look at where the vacancies are for receivers and who has enough cap to sign him. Beyond that, I think you're again thinking yourself into a pretzel a little bit if you try to get inside these guys' heads. Unless they say something outwardly, you can't know that they prioritize something just because you think it's what they should prioritize. We just never know. But the other wide receivers, Pat, beyond again Evans, Pittman, Higgins, Tyler Boyd, looks like Tyler Boyd is going to end up walking because of them prioritizing T. Higgins. Not that he's the most exciting player, but it will be a little weird to see Tyler Boyd on a team other than the Bengals. It feels
Panther.
It feels to me like he's just been there forever. And then beyond him, you've got Calvin Ridley, Curtis Samuel, and Odell Beckham Jr. for the, you know,
put Gabe Davis on the list, you coward.
Oh, I miss Gabe Davis. My bad. No, I would have. As much as
I didn't know if you were.
No. As much as I hate him, I was going off the spot rack free agents, and for some reason, I just didn't see his name. It organizes them by like how much they made last year, and I must have missed him.
I've been using spot rack for years, and up until like a couple of years ago, I thought it was sport track.
You dyslexic motherfucker.
When I found out it was spot rack,
I'll be honest, I have zero idea what it means. I have no idea. Who cares? I have not bothered, but
fantastic.
They are a fantastic
resource. I use them every year at the beginning of the MLB offseason in particular to see who the fuck is still on the books there. I guess to talk about Gabe Davis, I feel like Gabe Davis and Calvin Ridley are kind of in the same archetype here of these guys who we've seen flashes from them, but they're inconsistent. I tend to believe more in Calvin Ridley than I do Gabe Davis, just because it seems like it was more of a usage thing in Jacksonville. When Trevor Lawrence was targeting him, he produced. When Trevor Lawrence was targeting Christian Kirk, he didn't produce. I think there wasn't a steady flow of targets there. It seemed like it was either one or the other. You put Calvin Ridley in a situation where he's may not be the number one option, but is at least getting steady looks. I think we could see a far less frustrating player, at least from a fantasy perspective.
I'll say, as someone who watched Calvin Ridley super close this year as a heavy believer and investor in him, and he turned into my sort of Kyle Pitts Jr. or Gabe Davis 2.0, there were a lot of frustrating drops as well. Like, yes, the usage was up and down, and that was weird sometimes, but for the most part, to me, it seemed like Calvin Ridley is, either still shaking the rust off or is just permanently rusty. Like, this is just who he is at this point. What I want to see from Calvin Ridley, and we'll see if this reflects itself in our draft again in a few minutes, is I want to see Calvin Ridley go somewhere that he can be kind of playing alongside a bigger receiver, and he can be sort of the, you know, not to call him a gadget guy, but just somebody who can move around the formation a bunch and have a bigger receiver that takes that attention away a little bit. Because Calvin Ridley, especially when Christian Kirk went down, he's just not built to do that. And Zay Jones, like, you know, as much as I wanted it to just be Zay Jones taking that big receiver role and Calvin Ridley working kind of underneath him, like, Zay Jones isn't really good enough for that. So they, you know, kind of swap them out. And I just want Calvin Ridley to be not a slot receiver, but, you know, to that effect, like the smaller guy that just moves around the formation a little more. He's not designed to be that big dude who is the go-to every down receiver. He's just not.
I would certainly like to see him as well as the true number two, as opposed to Jacksonville, where he was kind of like a, oh, I liked Christian Kirk better going into the year, but kind of like, it was more of a 1A, 1B kind of deal. Like, I would like him to go somewhere where it is like clear. Kansas City. I think it'd be great in Kansas City, for example, where he is clearly the number two priority in that passing game.
Yeah, and with Patrick Mahomes, too, you know that things are just going to be opened up so much more on that offense. But yes, decent receivers here available. And we'll move on to tight ends here really quick. There's actually a decent chunk of notable tight ends here that are going to be available as well, two of them from the New England Patriots. You've got Hunter Henry, Dalton Schultz, Gerald Everett, Mike Gesicki, and Noah Fant. All five of those guys have the potential to be fantasy relevant depending on their landing spot. They also all have the potential to be completely unworthy of being drafted in fantasy football.
I was going to say, like, were you reading, like, the real life free agency, or were you just reading, like, the free agent market on a given week? Like, that's the, I mean, granted, Hunter Henry was pretty solid. Touchdown dependent, but somewhat solid. And then Dalton Schultz had his moments, but besides that, man, that is just the king of, like, the bi-week streamers, and man,
they
stink.
Are the streamers,
at least
from
a fantasy perspective. But I guess the guy that I'm most intrigued about here is Mike Gesicki, just because we saw him as such a dynamic guy where people were like, oh, he's basically a wide receiver, like, oh, you know, play in the slot. But and then it goes to New England where it's like people were like, oh, it's Rob Gronkowski and that other guy 2.0. Like,
redacted.
And, like, I don't think that was really ever going to work, so I would like to see him go to a place where he's going to be more prominently featured in the passing game, but, like, these guys are all, like you said, like, we've seen stuff from Noah Fant. Every year, it's like you want Gerald Everett to be good. Mm-hmm. And you look across the league, like, I made a list here of teams who could probably use one. This was just, like, off the cuff. I put down 13 of 32 teams that could probably get a tight end. Like, they're realistically, there's probably, like, 20 because of now as well, like, complimentary pieces and stuff like that. It's going to be a mess, and it's going to be hilarious to see where some of these guys end up. And if you pick a tight end in our draft, then you're nasty for that. I'm not doing it.
I have one designated for a location. We'll see if I end up actually picking him. But
all right,
we'll move on.
Brandon, talk about defensive players. I've been literally holding it for the last, like, 50 minutes, so.
Pat and his bladder issues. So defensively, look, there's a lot of really good free agents this year. Chris Jones, certainly the headliner of that group, and he's a complicated situation because he had that, you know, mini holdout situation leading into this season where I believe he missed the first game and then signed on. He says he wants to stay. He's not likely to be tagged because it would be $32 million if he got tagged. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, Brand, what's the reason for that? The franchise tag rules are that the tag is worth either the average salary of the top five highest paid players at the position, or it's 120% of the previous year's salary, whichever number is greater. Now, for Chris Jones, the 120% is greater. It's 120% of, I believe he had a $26 million cap hit this past year, so that takes it to $32 million. So the Chiefs, in all likelihood, are not going to tag him because it would simply be too expensive. And even though he wants to stay, it you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see him go just to wherever is going to pay him the most. He's also got a couple rings under his belt. Again, I'm not going to speculate as to what Chris Jones wants to prioritize in free agency, but he does have those rings, so could potentially maybe be a factor. Who knows? He's definitely the biggest headliner. Pat, welcome back.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening the whole time at least, but like, yeah, in theory he wants to come back, and in theory they want him to come back, but could that come at the cost of a guy like L'Jarius Sneed? Or... Sure. You know, getting a more established weapon alongside Travis Kelce for Patrick Mahomes. Like, sure, Chris Jones is great. Chris Jones is probably the best defensive tackle in the game, either him or Aaron Donald these days. Like, so, like, of course you want him, but is that true? Is that going to mess with the rest of your roster construction? I mean, it's the Chiefs. I'm sure they'll figure it out either way, but, it, you know, it begs the question.
We will see what this alleged Patrick Mahomes contract restructure that he talked about ends up freeing up for them. But it certainly seems like
a dollar.
It certainly seems like even if and when that happens, the Chiefs will probably have to make a choice between Sneed and Chris Jones. It's hard to see them getting both, especially if they want to add, you know, a receiver like we mentioned. And they're going to have to add some kind of receiver, depending, or regardless of what, you know, level of talent it is, whether it's Mike Evans or it's Josh Reynolds. They got to fucking do something. So we'll see. And then just to go down the other notable defensive players, you've got Josh Allen, Justin Madubuike, Brian Burns, Christian Wilkins, Danielle Hunter, Jalen Johnson, L'Jarius Sneed, Antoine Winfield Jr., Chase Young, Leonard Williams, and again, the list goes on. You can look up the full list of free agents if you want. There are a lot of franchise tag candidates here. So that's one thing to note. Like, this free agent class, when we're sitting here on March 13th, I'd say at least half these guys might be off the list. Yeah. Certainly, we would expect Josh Allen and Brian Burns to be off that list. Those guys are indispensable for their teams.
And there have been reports as well that the Bucs are planning on tagging Antoine Winfield, who I believe was first-team All-Pro this year, despite not making the Pro Bowl, because the Pro Bowl. But so that's another just obvious tag there. But yeah, a lot of really solid guys here. But you know the meme where it's like all like the guys and the soldiers and then the clown.
Yeah,
it feels like Chase Young is the clown here on that list of them. Because outside of that man's rookie year, he has just been a rotational piece. But I mean, I'm sure some team will ride the potential there. But like when San Francisco got him, everyone's like, "Oh my God, what else how much help does Brock Purdy need?"
And it's admittedly, like, I felt that way, and I was and very he just
and they got him to be a rotational piece, and that's exactly what he was. You also did not put Clelin Ferrell on this list. I couldn't help but notice, fellow 49er. So maybe you could draft him. We could do him in the draft. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be doing that. But yeah, you know, that you mentioned the clown soldiering. That was also how I felt putting Odell in the wide receivers group. But
we didn't shit on him enough. Maybe we'll shit on him in the draft when we pick someone else.
These guys who just are pure name value at this point. Chase Young, I think, at least has. Chase Young's whole problem is his motor. Like, he's still the same dude. He's still the same athlete. By all accounts, he's just fucking lazy sometimes. So, like,
24,
at least.
What the hell?
Yeah. At least there's still, like, a ceiling of production for him there. Odell is old and washed and did not deserve $15 million. Odell did not deserve $15 million this season. I did tweet about that today, and I got some replies that I guess made a good point. They were like, well, as soon as they signed Odell, Lamar signed because. The thinking there, you know, the Ravens finally got a receiver, and I guess Lamar was happy about that. I feel like Odell's just one of those guys that players around the league like and value more than anyone else who's objectively watching the production he provides, which is minimal at this point in his career. So look, if giving 15 mil to Odell allowed you to sign Lamar, if that was truly the cause and effect, then yeah, sure, all the way worth it. But just looking at it from a kind of a less stupid perspective, not worth $15 million. Yeah.
You know, it's funny too.
Was bad.
We're kind of circling back on like about a year of the podcast iteration of the podcast. So it's like we're like recycling. You know, we're talking about things we were talking about a year ago, and I remember one of my first podcasts. I did not like that at all.
Yeah,
and, it kind of. But I did like Jimmy G. So we got it. That was my first podcast. So that never happened. But Odell's a clown. But yeah, Chase Young. To your point. Like, this dude's 24 years old. Like, we've seen him be really, really good. Obviously, he's had some injury issues, but he is certainly still someone who can play probably at an above average level. But is someone going to pay him a whole lot of money? I hope not.
I hope not as well. I'll say this, and you know, I don't really have many players tabbed for the Patriots for our upcoming draft, but the Patriots have a lot of money coming into this offseason. I am both excited and nervous about what we could potentially do with that money, because it's almost fuck you money, where it's like we could go out and sign a Chase Young and it's not even a big deal because we still have more money to spend elsewhere, but like I also just don't want to sign Chase Young, so we'll see how that goes. All right, Pat, I guess without further ado, let's get into it. This is our ideal fantasy football fits draft. Again, it is us going back and forth, putting players in what we believe will be their ideal fantasy football fits. And once one of us uses a player and puts him on one team, the other person cannot use the same player and put him on a different team. So we control their fates, and that's that. Pat, I think you had the first pick in the last draft.
I will take
the first pick in this draft, and with the 101 of ideal fantasy football fits, I am going to put Saquon Barkley on the Houston Texans. This is a move that honestly I've been thinking about since like midseason when, yeah, Devin Singletary looked good at times, but he's Devin Singletary. And if you look at his numbers, he basically just did the same thing this year as he has done every year. He's a fine depth back. He's also a free agent. So this spot could not possibly be more open for a guy like Saquon Barkley. This offense, especially with Bobby Slowick sticking around, is incredibly high powered. The Texans have the money to make a move like this. And honestly, Pat, with CJ Stroud's rookie deal, they can probably pay Saquon for 2 or 3 years before they even have to worry about CJ Stroud's deal. But also, like, they have so much cap space that this deal probably wouldn't hamstring them regardless. This just feels like the sort of perfect, you know, we suddenly have a contender. Where are the pieces we need to upgrade? Here's a piece. Here is one of the best talents at the position in the league. I would absolutely love to see Saquon Barkley on this team, and I think he would be incredibly productive in fantasy football when he finally doesn't have Daniel fucking Jones leading the way for him.
Yeah, no, that would have been my first pick had it not been yours. So, you know, obvious there. The way I'm going to approach this, I don't know if you want to jump on board, is like, once one of the things happens, like, that's real life. Like, so, like, say you pick Saquon to the Texans, I'm not going to pick Austin Eckler to the Texans because they signed Saquon.
I'm down for that.
That's the way I'm going to do it. So let's try and do that if we can here. I'm going to go with another obvious one. Well, obvious, not obvious, but it's one that people have kind of been, you know, we talk about Mike Evans, you talk about a young quarterback who could probably use his services. His offensive coordinator's there. So Mike Evans, you are a Carolina Panther.
Wow. Okay. Carolina Panthers. That's not, so I have seen, you know, those rumors, or at least that, maybe it's just Panthers fans being hopeful. I think that's an interesting move, Pat. I'm curious to hear why the Panthers over the Chiefs, assuming fantasy fits.
I think I'm also trying to like predict it a little bit as well.
That's fair.
Rather more so than like, you know, a fantasy thing. No, you know what I mean? Like, not a fantasy football thing, like a fantasy world kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just more so a Chiefs thing than a Mike Evans thing, where it's just like, they have never really been a proponent of having, you know, this big outside weapon. You know, even Tyreek Hill, who was their stud wide receiver, was not a traditional stand on the outside, go and get jump balls wide receiver.
Right.
And we saw with their wide receiver core this year, they don't think they need a wide receiver to win a Super Bowl. And plot twist, they're right. They're right. So it's more so a fact that I just don't see it from a Chiefs spot. Obviously, if you're looking like for the ideal fit for him, Kansas City, but I just don't see it happening. I see, you know, maybe I'll pick a different wide receiver to the Chiefs. But I think with Dave Canales there, Bryce Young, you know, isn't going to take a huge, huge leap, but we're going to see the reason why this guy was drafted number one overall. And Mike Evans would help him a lot, and he would be by far the best target, the best target on that offense. Who would be the next? Adam Thielen? Like,
oh my God.
Like, that's
Jonathan
what I'm saying.
Mingo, so, like, probably, but yeah, nothing crazy.
Yeah, so I will go with that. A little hope for Panthers fans. There's not a lot of hope to be had right now, but I'll throw you Mike Evans on this one.
Yeah, I think just to touch on the Chiefs thing too, I would hope, I mean, look, I hope the Chiefs fuck everything up so they never win a Super Bowl again, but I would hope that they recognize that just because they won the Super Bowl doesn't mean they don't need receiver help. But to your point with Evans and, you know, them never having sort of that big outside weapon, yeah, they don't need to make a huge splash at receiver to feel comfortable. I mentioned Josh Reynolds before. Like, I literally think signing Josh Reynolds would be perfectly fine. If that was the only receiver move they made, and then say they draft one in the third or fourth round, like, I think that's fine. They've shown they don't need great receivers. They just need guys who are not going to actively fuck things up regularly, which they weeded them out throughout the year.
I have someone set on Kansas City that is a little better than Josh Reynolds, but it's almost like the Patriots for the last 15 years, outside of Randy Moss. They never had another Randy Moss. So anytime there was any big wide receiver, oh, Patriots, 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 Patriots. And it just never happened. Or it would happen, you know, 5 years after their prime. Rest in peace, Demaryius Thomas, Julio Jones. Thomas never even played. But, you know, guys like that, like, they never got that Randy Moss after Randy Moss because their system just didn't need it.
Yeah, they were more than happy to rotate the Chris Hogans and Danny Amendolas of the world instead. Okay, with my second pick in this draft, I'm gonna create the fit that people have talked about for honestly a couple of years now. It's come up in trade rumors at the trade deadline. It is Derrick Henry to the Baltimore Ravens, and you talk about the Ravens, you know, not running the ball enough in the playoff game against the Chiefs. I dare you to not run the ball enough when you have Derrick Henry on your roster. The Ravens have both J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards are free agents. I could very easily see both of them being let go. We are also at the point now where we are not betting on getting anything from J.K. Dobbins, as sad as it is to say. I hope he recovers, but it's just not a player you're banking on. Derrick Henry, look, Pat, the Ravens are not flush with cap room, so this might take some maneuvering to make happen. They're not in cap hell either, but I purely from a fit perspective and a potentially realistic perspective, I am going Derrick Henry to the Ravens. Yes, you know, he'll have to compete with having a running quarterback on his team, which will maybe hurt his fantasy value a little bit, but just in terms of being on a team that is going to have so many scoring opportunities, I think this late in Henry's career, this is the right spot for him. He's going to have guys on the team with him that can kind of open things up a little bit. You can't put 10 guys in the box against a Lamar Jackson Ravens team. He will make you pay. So I like this fit for Henry.
Yeah, and I think Derrick Henry's interesting because I think he can go. There are, well, obviously, you know, like any team, but, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Philadelphia in the past. You know, there was the report, the rumor that he was traded. Like, it was going to happen. I also even like the thought of the Cowboys. You know, even if the Cowboys retain Tony Pollard and go and get a guy like Derrick Henry to be the complement that that Tony Pollard needs. We didn't talk much about Tony Pollard. Maybe I'll pick him somewhere just for the sake of us to talk about him a little bit. But, yeah, that was – I've been cucked twice. I mean, I guess I could have just taken Henry the first time, but I digress. So I will go with one of my boys here. I'm assuming the lone quarterback that will be taken in this exercise here.
Likely.
I'm going to send Kirk Cousins to the Atlanta Falcons.
I'm glad you did it, because if you didn't, I was going to.
I think that, you know, I was talking about before, he provides just enough floor that you need. You put him with the players with the potential of Bijan Robinson, Drake London, and Kyle Pitts. I think that would launch them up. Those three players in particular, you know, Cousins, I'd say, would be a fringe QB1 like he is every year going into the season, but more so for the sake, you know, Bijan's going to be there, but more so for the sake of London and Pitts in particular. We've just seen such bad, bad QB play in Atlanta there, and I think they just need to make a better move, but at the same time, a safer move too. Like, you know, you think of Kirk Cousins as more of a safer move here. So that's what I go. If I had to pick Cousins somewhere else other than Minnesota, I would say Pittsburgh. We talked about Pittsburgh as a possibility, but I think Atlanta, the skill position players in Atlanta excite me more than in Pittsburgh, despite my George Pickens fandom at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit. And I mentioned before how my prediction is that Justin Fields goes to the Falcons. Just for the sake of this exercise, obviously we're not using Justin Fields. Look, if it's not Fields, I think it should be Cousins. I think the Falcons will get one of these two guys, leaning Fields for now, but honestly, it's not by much. And Pat, this is the kind of signing that, like, I don't know if the Falcons would go this direction. I believe they're sitting with the number, what, 8 pick in the draft? Number 8. I don't know that they would go this direction, but, like, they could sign Kirk Cousins and then draft a guy like J.J. McCarthy at 8. You know, we slandered McCarthy earlier. Look, as long as he's the fourth quarterback off the board, I'm fine. I think he's got a real chance to be good in the NFL. I just don't think he's the prospect that those guys are. Like, that's a move you can make and have McCarthy sit behind Kirk for a year or two and see where it gets you. And in the interim, you've got Kirk leading a contender, potentially.
Or, hear me out, Brock Bowers.
Brock Bowers and Kyle Pitts on the same team, man.
Just all the generational tight end prospects, Atlanta.
that would be fun. There's your real Gronk and Hernandez, even from like a like play style perspective. I feel like that would be that would be lit. No, I like this pick though. Kirk to Atlanta is great for all parties involved. With my next pick, I am going to reassign my boy Calvin Ridley to somewhere that I think his talents can shine a little bit more. It's inside the division. I'm going to send him to the Tennessee Titans. I said I want him to play alongside a bigger receiver. Will Levis needs as many weapons as he can get. I understand Treylon Burks exists, but does he really? Look, I don't know.
Yeah, we can't see that.
This to me, look, I kind of have to zap Treylon Burks from existence to make this work, but I'm going to do that. I think on a team that is poised to be more or less tanking or just bad next year, I guess I'll say, you know, they're going to be throwing a lot. They've got a quarterback who's going to be willing to throw a lot, assuming Levis is the guy. And playing alongside Hopkins, like, that's the kind of role I want to see Calvin Ridley in. Will it be, you know, weekly sustained fantasy football success from Calvin Ridley? Probably not, because, again, I don't rely on that from anybody on a truly bad team like what I project Tennessee to be. But this is about salvaging the fantasy value that we thought Calvin Ridley would have had this year. And do I think he can put up a more maybe consistent version of the season total he had this year? Yeah, because that's the problem. You look up Calvin Ridley's stats, you're like, oh, he was pretty good. I think he finished as like the wide receiver, like 18 or something. He was over 1,000 yards, all that stuff. But it was just week to week, he was unstartable if you actually play fantasy football. This is the potential for him to, you know, get a good amount of targets week in and week out, help a young quarterback develop, and have a receiver take some of the heat off him. So I'm putting him on the Titans.
I did not expect that one. That was not one I expected. He was the guy that I had tabbed to Kansas City. That was going to be my next pick. Got to give them a wide receiver. Now, fuck it, Josh Reynolds. No. but, yeah, it's true. Like, if you want Will, if we really want to unleash Will Levis the way that I've been hoping that Brian Callahan will, Calvin Ridley is the perfect kind of guy alongside DeAndre Hopkins and our boy Chigakonkwo. But he would immediately, even though he's not the top option, he would, I don't know, I'm not a DeAndre Hopkins guy. Maybe he would be the best player. Maybe he won't be the go-to option, but at least someone with sort of a different, where he's not the alpha, where Ridley's not that alpha outside wide receiver. So yeah, I could see something like that. Man, I am,
I will continue cucking you all draft. Deal with it.
We have three running backs here, three pretty good running backs, or at least fantasy relevant. My last pick is going to be funny. So,
oh, fuck. Okay.
So, I know that. So, I've got to find two here, and I see three running backs here, and we've got several open spots here. I don't want to be lame and do a re-sign. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it. So, quit asking. okay, fine. Odell Beckham to the Sun. No.
Okay. I was like, what is he about to say? Even just mid-sentence. I was like, Odell, what the fuck?
Maybe I'll just predict T. Higgins's
T. Higgins franchise tag. Yeah.
Do I just take my fifth round pick right now just for the sake of it? Because I don't know what else I want to do. Fuck it. We talked about how the Chargers are kind of in cap hell.
Oh, boy.
I don't believe this will be their only running back signing, But I think Greg Roman's going to reunite with his boy Gus Edwards this offseason.
Ah, see, I don't think that's a bad pick.
A cheap option. I believe they will certainly bring someone in as a compliment, not Austin Eckler. I don't think Austin Eckler would work in that kind of role. He seems to be done there. Friend of the podcast, by the way. But if they are trying to get someone in for the cheap who can really work in Greg Roman's system, that offense should be good. In theory, with Harbaugh and Herbert and the gang there, a lot of goal line opportunities, and that's our boy Gus's thing. So that was going to be kind of my troll pick there at the end. But I will do it now because I have no fucking idea what else to do.
No, I thought about that one. My heart, the only reason I didn't have that down is because my heart is still set on Blake Corum going to the Chargers. But again, that's something we have to wait until the draft to see if it happens. And that is, again, something that, like, if we do see Gus Edwards sign with the Chargers when free agency opens, that probably renders that pretty unlikely. I mean, look, Corum's going to be a sort of a mid-round pick anyway, so maybe it doesn't render it impossible. But
I don't think it's
certainly
does.
Certainly less logical, I guess, at least to an extent. Okay. With my next pick, you're making me not want to do a re-sign now because I thought about it. I have one re-sign on here.
Oh, do it. If you think that's going to be the real impact move, I thought about it. But just looking at those three running backs who obviously we know are Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, and Austin Eckler, I just didn't want to put them back on their teams. That's why I didn't do it. So if you want to do it, do it.
Thinking of realistic landing spots and actually making a guy fantasy relevant, I am putting Hunter Henry back on the Patriots. I'm not out on Hunter Henry. The Patriots are undergoing an absolute metamorphosis with their team. Their coaching staff has been thrown out the window and replaced with completely new guys, even though the new head coach was a guy who was already in the building. Hunter Henry was, for the first couple weeks of this season, you know, scoring touchdowns. He's been a touchdown dependent guy in the past, and he's gotten those touchdowns in the past. I think if this team, and I'm holding out hope that they will, you know, drafts a quarterback at number three, he is the perfect sort of security blanket and red zone threat. If and when they get to the red zone, hopefully the offense will be more efficient no matter who the new quarterback is. I just feel like with Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi, that rotation of bullshit at quarterback, we really saw the worst of the worst that we could see with this offense. And Henry still poked his head out like a little fantasy relevant gopher at times and put up points and made you think about adding him in fantasy. Like, if you have even better, just anything better than the bare minimum on this team, I think this is a spot, you know, with his familiarity on the team, that he could be a reliable TE1 for you, albeit obviously a back end one, but still a guy who could find his name onto the fantasy radar.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. I said if you took a tight end, you'd be nasty, so you're nasty. But we got two picks here left. I feel like I gotta go with the best player available, the guy that I think can go somewhere and sort of be in every down kind of back, or, you know, very heavily dependent there on the back. So
Devin Singletary.
I'm going to go with a close and personal friend, not of the podcast, though, my close and personal friend, Josh Jacobs, and we're going to send him all the way across the country. We're going to send him to Philadelphia.
I had that, too. I love it. Fire.
I thought about the Giants, but and that would be another good spot because that's another spot where they would clearly give him the kind of carries that he commands. But I think his days with the Raiders are over. I think the Raiders are going to be on to Zamir White here. But again, he's still good enough and at the age where he can make a, you know, a solid salary for himself, but also be in a position to, you know, get a lot of carries. And Philly would be great. I mean, that's a great offense. The touchdowns, if they ban the tush push, this gets even better.
I love that. Yeah, you know, seeing that DeAndre Swift is a free agent, that there's absolutely going to be a spot. And, you know, tush push, banned or not, with Jason Kelce gone, potentially gone. He hasn't fully retired, I don't think, yet. It seems like that's going to be a, you know, less frequently run play, one would think. And that opens up a lot for whoever their running back ends up being. Okay, Pat, with my final pick, you thought I was nasty for a tight end. How about a defensive player that props up a DST in fantasy so much just by his own existence there? I'm going to put Chris Jones on the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's why.
Ooh.
It's not just because, you know, the Bengals have some defensive pieces and he'll help that defense. It's because the Bengals' schedule for this upcoming season, as far as, you know, looking at it in February, is friendly. So here are their opponents in 2024. At home, they've got the Ravens. So I'll actually go by quarterback because that's usually the best way to judge how many fantasy points a defense can score against that team. So you've got Lamar, then you've got Deshaun Watson, whoever the fuck the Steelers are going to start, whoever the fuck the Broncos are going to start, whoever the fuck the Raiders are going to start, then you've got Jalen Hurts, whoever the Commanders are going to start, and whoever the Patriots are going to start, Pat. That is as light as you can get for a home schedule. And then away, you've got Lamar, Deshaun, again, whoever the Steelers are going to start, Dak Prescott, Pat Mahomes, those are tougher. Justin Herbert, I mean, that's not an ideal matchup, but still one that, you know, has proved fruitful at times. I think if this defense asserts itself as like one of the better ones in fantasy, I could see you leaving them in for that matchup. Then you've got Daniel Jones, Bryce Young, and Will Levis. Like the Bengals defense, if they can put together a unit that is actually frightening and they have the cap room to sign a guy like Chris Jones and maybe another piece too, that is a defense that I will be very much interested in fantasy. I would love to see them get a big name like Chris Jones to anchor it.
Certainly not the direction I was expecting you to go in, but I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the Bengals. At least I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Bengals in one of our viewer questions. So I will leave it at that for now. So one more pick here. I'll just again spitball. I'm looking at Austin Eckler. I'm looking at Tony Pollard. Fuck, I'm looking at Zeke. For God's sake, I'm looking at Zeke. I kind of want to do something here, but it might be wishful thinking. I was thinking about putting our friend Austin Eckler on the Raiders, but I don't think realistically I can do that here. As I just said, I think they're in on Zamir White.
They could be in on Eckler too, though. That could be that's the exact kind of pairing I wouldn't be shocked to see, truthfully.
Yeah, I might cheat.
What?
I might cheat here.
What do you mean cheat?
Yup. Hold on.
You're a cheater.
The last team I'm going to have here is the Dallas Cowboys, and I am going to have them sign Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott together.
Oh my fucking God.
I think they're going to run it back.
Oh, that'd be so funny.
But I truly believe that that would be a great spot for Zeke, because we saw that Zeke can still do what Zeke does in the short yarded situations. And the thing about Tony Pollard, I forget the exact numbers. Again, these are things I could easily write down if I, you know, really went to that next level of research. But he said that like his injury was really bothering him until about like week 9. And you can clearly see a shift in the numbers after that point. So, you know, obviously he was one of the bigger disappointments in fantasy last year, but I have not closed the book on Tony Pollard. That said, I still think you need a bigger running back. Not to take all the goal line carries, but, you know, at least in certain situations. And Zeke is obviously a guy Jerry Jones loved. Jerry Jones likes making the big name move, and I guess Zeke is still technically a big name. He's not a great big name, but I do think the Cowboys are going to... run it back to a couple of years ago with the duo of Pollard and Zeke.
I could see it now, all of the just incredibly creative and funny tweets. First look at Zeke in a Cowboys jersey. Shut the fuck up.
Do it
again. Awful. All right. There you go, folks. Those are our best fits for some of the best fantasy fits for some of the free agents out there. You know, we try to toe the line here between realistic and what we'd like to see happen, what would be best for their numbers. And we'll see how many, if any of these. I agree. We'll see how many, if any, of these become reality here in the next, in 3 weeks when free agency opens. But yeah, I like a lot of these fits. I think they make a lot of sense. The Cowboys one would truly make me laugh. Okay, let's move on to the viewer questions here, Pat. We'll get through a couple of them. I don't know if we'll get through all of them. We do have a lot.
We just got a letter.
Oh, fuck. Oh, man. I hit one sound effect. I'm like, my quota's done for the day.
You've hit your quota, man.
Here,
you're getting paid for the day.
Nope.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
Thank you, Steve from Blue's Clues, and Pat for reminding me. Okay, what Pat bad NFL Blue's team? Clues. What bad NFL team? Chargers excluded, will most likely become competitive the quickest. I think, you know, obviously the Chargers were the very obvious pick because of them signing Jim Harbaugh. Pat, do you have initial thoughts on this? I think I know who I'm going to go with here.
There's one team, like I'm looking at a last place team, but I don't consider them bad per se. Mm-hmm. So I don't really want to pick them. I'm going to say the Atlanta Falcons, because I don't think they were a fucking good team. I mean, I guess it's kind of cheating again, because what were they, like 7-10 or something disgusting? Or I don't know, but I do not consider them a contender, but I'll go there. I'll go there, because honestly, there's a last place team, but spoiler alert, we have a last place team question, but I don't think that team was bad, so I'm not going to go with them.
That's fair. I think I'm going to go... do I want to... Screw it. I'll put just unwarranted faith in this team. I'll go with the Chicago Bears. I'll say that Caleb Williams, you know, gets them to be just a little bit improved over Justin Fields. The problem is that, you know, if he's not a quick adjuster to the NFL, even if he does become the guy we want him to be, he could tank the first like 5 games and then the Bears just don't end up with a good record this year, even if he ends up being good. So that's the risk, but I'm going to go with him just for the sake of, I think they are one of the better position teams because of where they are in the draft, and they're going to get this generational prospect, or what we think is a generational prospect. They've got kind of the best chance, you know, potential momentum here to make it happen.
DJ Moore, so, Montez Sweat, yeah, they've got some nice players there. I thought about it.
Yeah. Next question. This question is just mock draft episode, question mark. Yes, there will be one likely eventually. We're going to wait till the draft gets a little bit closer. Can Miami win a Super Bowl with Tua? I think they are close. This question from Doug Miranda 72. No. No.
Yeah, I'm also going to say no, just because look at the 49ers. Like I kind of liken Tua to Brock Purdy in terms of their true ceiling. And they got to the Super Bowl, but San Francisco is a machine. We've talked about it, how that, you know, that is a system like the Patriots were in the past, for example. Like, the Dolphins don't have that yet. If the Dolphins can establish that, then maybe they'll have a shot. But no, I think they can get damn close. They can win the AFC with Tua, perhaps. But I don't know if they're going to be able to get the job done with him, though.
I saw this tweet that brought up sort of a conversation like this about, you know, just the vast majority of Super Bowl winning teams have truly elite, like, eventual Hall of Fame level quarterbacks. And, you know, yes, there are the exceptions.
Joe Flacco.
No, there are the exceptions like Nick Foles, like Joe Flacco. But from a process perspective, you are not doing yourself any favors if you try to be the 1 or 2 out of every 10 versus being the 8 out of every 10 that is, you know, teams with an elite quarterback. Yeah, the Dolphins could be the 2 out of 10 and, you know, be that team that wins a Super Bowl without an elite quarterback. But I'm not going to bet on it, especially not in the AFC where Tua was not even a top 5 quarterback in his own conference. You know, that team could win the conference by virtue of the rest of their players, but it doesn't seem like great odds to me. Next question. Who will go from worst to first next year and vice versa? Pat, I think I know who you were talking about from going worst to first.
It's the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah,
I definitely. Mean, they the fact that they were still kind of competitive, even with Jake Browning, and they had a tough start with Joe Burrow, too, but they finally started clicking. I think if, you know, Burrow goes into the full season healthy. Remember, Burrow had that injury in training camp as well. I think you get a full season of healthy Burrow. Even though the Ravens are going to be damn good again, too, but I think the Bengals, at least, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to predict them to go worst to first, but I think they certainly have the best chance.
Yeah, I mean, look, as of right now, I don't think that's a bad prediction at all. They kind of had the division, you know, in the palm of their hand for as long as Burrow's been quarterback, and this year was the first year, I think. I'll go through year by year just to confirm this. So the Bengals won the division in 2022, won the division in 2021, and let's see, 2020 was this pre-Burrow? This was ACL Burrow, I think. Was this when Burrow got hurt? But yeah, basically when Burrow played 10 games. Yeah, when Burrow's been healthy, this has been their division. So I think that's almost like a safe bet. Like, obviously the Ravens are great, but it's as good of a bet for going worst to first as you can get. And then I'm just going to agree with you on that, Pat. So let's go. What team do we think is going to go from first to worst? Because I guess that can happen too.
The Bucks.
The Bucks, yeah. I guess the Bucks are the obvious one.
Close division, you know, maybe we'll see the Panthers get better under Dave Canales here. And if they don't get Mike Evans back, and if Baker Mayfield was truly a product of Dave Canales, we could see them go down to, like, you know, even like 6 wins, but with that division being such a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Again, then, not to say that it will happen, but I just can't really see any other of the division winners coming in dead last.
No, I agree. It would be something that you can't really predict that would cause that. It would be, a Bengals, Joe Burrow season-ending injury, something to that effect to one of these teams' quarterbacks if it was to happen. And we are not in the business of predicting those kind of things because what the fuck? Absolutely not. What would be wrong with us if we did that? Pat, we'll skip one of these questions and save it for next week, and we'll finish out with favorite pizza in Connecticut. This question from Jim A. James. I am a firm supporter of Connecticut being the pizza capital of the United States.
Specifically New Haven.
New Haven. So, Pat, do you have a go-to spot in Connecticut that's your favorite?
I think I've just been to Pepe so much more often than the other two really big ones. Sally's was fucking nuts, like so good, so good. But I think the fact that there are Pepe's, you know, I live about 45 minutes, maybe a little less from New Haven, so it's not convenient. But you know, there's a couple Pepe's within 20 minutes of me, so it's just been more convenient. But so I guess I'll go with Pepe's just out of convenience. But they are all very similar and so fucking good.
There is a specific type of pizza that I like in Connecticut, and apparently it's not widely known elsewhere. So, like, I like Pepe's, don't get me wrong, but it's not my favorite. Like, it's called a New England style Greek or New England Greek style pizza or something like that. It's basically a little bit of a thicker crust, the kind that you would get Pat at like Mystic Pizza. So I'm gonna go Mystic Pizza being the most well known that serves that type of pizza, and it's basically that style is great everywhere I've gotten it. I'll go with them because that's gonna be the one I can recommend for people to go to. My favorite.
We went there for our draft last year.
We did that weekend. That was actually, I think, the first time I had been to that one specifically. But I was like, yeah, this is the great
too,
you know, style of pizza that I've grown up on. My favorite specific location, though, if you're ever in the area near the University of Connecticut, is Willington Pizza. Same exact style, super dope vibe in there, bunch of like antiques and stuff. But yeah, look, Connecticut is the pizza capital. I will stand by that. Superior pizza. The only other state I will even let have a say is New York. Anywhere else,
New Jersey's got solid pizza too, but outside of the doofenshmirtz looking ass tri-state area, I'm gonna have to put my foot down.
Yeah, and you folks in Chicago with your fucking calzones and pies and whatever the
That's delicious. Deep dish pizza is delicious. Sure, it's just not really pizza.
It's its own thing. It's like a hot dog a sandwich. No, it's its own thing, but it's fine. Okay, great question there. By the way, I'm very much a Connecticut pizza.
I'm fat. He used to be fat. So food is a great topic.
And I'm a Connecticut pizza snob who lives in Denver who has awful pizza. There's like two good pizza places in this entire state, and the state's fucking huge. So that's my take on that. All right, folks, we will be back next week reacting to any sort of franchise tag news or draft rumors or whatever you have. Send us your suggestions for any other segments you might want to see on the show, and obviously send us viewer questions as you always do as I procure them every Monday. But that'll do it for this episode of Off the Bench. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we'll see you guys next week.
Go UConn.